Okay, Shalom Aleichem Rabosai. Today's daf is Sukkah, daf Chaf Aleph. Good to be back in the saddle. I had a couple of weeks with the tremendous chus of learning with my father one-on-one in his base medrash, but back to Eretz Yisrael and back to recording the daf Yomi. So we are here. We have the chus of starting the second parak. We'll start the second parak today, just back it up a little bit. And again, the second parak also starts, continues talking about the halachas of Sukkah. And it starts off with the following. If you sleep underneath the bed, and if you remember back in the day, the beds used to have like these canopies, right? We talked about at the beginning of the Masecha, of the Masechta. So, lo yotze dechovaso, right? You are not yotze sleeping in the sukkah. Now, Rashi already points out it also goes, the same goes for eating and drinking. And the Gemara will discuss, right, as soon as we get into the Gemara, right, how big this this bed is. If you remember, there's a whole discussion. Is it 10 tefachim? Is it less than 10 tefachim? More than 10 tefachim? Right, we had a whole what to do earlier in the Masechta as well. So, okay, so again, if you sleep or eat or drink, as Rashi says, underneath a bed in a sukkah, you are not yotze. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, no hagan hayinu. It used to be the minhag. Shehainu yishenim tagas hamita b'fnei hazakinim v'lo amru lanu davar. It used to be that we used to sleep under a bed in a sukkah in front of the rabbanim, and they didn't say anything. So apparently it was fine. Rabbi Shimon ma'isa b'tavi avdo sharam gamliel. Rabbi Shimon says there's a story about Tavi, the servant of Rabbi Gamliel, right? Pretty well known, recorded a bunch of times in the Mishnais. Tavi was Rabbi Gamliel's servant. Shai yashin tagas hamita. He was sleeping under a bed in a sukkah. Rabbi Gamliel, his kinyan, Rabbi Gamliel remarked to the people, the rabbanim that were with him, "Reisim Tevi Avdi Shu Talmid Chacham. Check out Tevi, my servant. He's such a Talmid Chacham. V'yodesh Avadim Psurim in a sukkah. He knows that the servants, that every Kenani is parted from the sukkah. L'vilach Yashin Hu Tagas Amita. Right. So therefore, he sleeps under a bed. I.e., implying, like the Tanakama, that you should not sleep under a bed in a sukkah. Meaning, he knows he's potter. Therefore, he's sleeping in a bed, which would not allow you to fulfill the mitzvah anyway. Lufita arkenu, and through our ways, meaning through the conversation that we had, Lamanu, we learned, this is back to Rabbi Shimon talking, right, through the thing that Rabbi Gamliel said to the Rabbanim, we learned, Shayashin takas amita liyotze yidei chovaso, right, we learned parenthetically, right, that someone who sleeps underneath the bed, right, is not yotze his chiyuv. Okay, so the Gemara says, Va'alecha asara, 1 second, going back again, as promised, the Gemara wants to know, how tall is this bed? Right. Usually, most beds apparently were less than 10 tefachim, or just there. It's possible that the bed was less than 10 tefachim. So, if we said before, if you remember the whole discussion, Shmuel, right, said that if it's less than 10 tefachim, it's not considered an ohel, it's not considered a bed, right, it's not considered something that will be masik and be its own type of canopy. So, why wouldn't you be yotze? The Gemara simply says, yeah, targum Shmuel b'mita asara. So, it must be that the case in the Mishnah, right, is when the bed is 10 tefachim tall. Okay. It's not how someone under the Mishnah. Okay, so now we're going to analyze. Rabbi Yehuda says that Rabbi Yehuda obviously says that they used to sleep underneath a bed in a sukkah, and it was totally fine. Meaning, it was not an ohel. It was not something that that not interspersed, but I guess that stopped, right, you from being in a sukkah. Right, it wasn't considered its own ohel. Halachic, right? An ohel is a halachic manifestation, not only in Hilchos Tumah and Tara, like we're about to see, but right, if you're in an ohel, and then you're not in a sukkah, right? So if you, right, so we have to, it's important to define a halachic ohel, because if you're in an ohel, you're not in a sukkah, and we're going to bring proofs from the halachos of ohel and Tumah and Tara to try and figure out what Rabbi Yehuda Shita is about certain about an ohel and why this bed does not constitute a problem. So now the Mishnah says Tan Hasam over there. It's, where is that man? Oholos or something? I assume right. Ohel right? Okay. Oholos. Good. Yeah. Paragilal. Yeah. Paragilal. Mishnah Vav. Mishnah Zayin. Mishnah Zayin. Okay. Echad chor shacharu mayim. Whether it's a hole that water dug out, or shrotzim, or bugs dug it out, or shachlu milechas, or maybe some rocks, some sort of kind of rotted out, and the rocks kind of ate it out. V'chein midbach avanim, and so too a pile of stones. V'chein savar shel koros, and also like a pile of beams. Mahel alatuma, in any scenario, all of those things. Right? Again, those things are examples of things that were created on its own. Right, that's the water ate it away, or there were bugs, or some sort of right, minerals or whatever, right, kind of ate at the rocks or whatever. So this is things that are not created by man, right? So it happens on its own. So the Mishnah there says, Mahil alatuma, it does create an ohel over Tuma, right? We had this a couple of days ago, if you remember, that if you have, let's say a beam of wood, and you have at least a kazayas of dead body, that's the minimum share, a kazayas of dead body on one side of the beam, and something else underneath the beam at the other side, so the beam will be mahil ala Tuma. It will create an ohel, a halachic tent, over the Tuma, and therefore anything under the beam is going to become Tame. So therefore the plate, for example, at the end of the beam, is going to become Tame if you have a kazayas of a mace underneath the same beam. So the Mishnah here teaches that anything that was man-made, anything that was not man-made, right, still is considered to be an ohel for purposes of Tuma and Tame, for transferring Tuma. Rabbi Yehuda says, though, kol ohel she'enu asui bidei adam, eino ohel. No, Rabbi Yehuda says it's not true. Meaning anything that, let's say, was created by water or by a bug or whatever it is, any type of ohel that was not created to be an ohel, right? It's not the shame ohel, if you look at Rashi, right? Mitzkavin lasos ohel, there's no kavana here to create an ohel, therefore that's not going to make an ohel for tuma purposes. The Gemara says, my time is Rabbi Yehuda, what's his shita? What's his reasoning? So yolif ohel ohel mean mishkan. He has a gzera shava from the mishkan. Right? If you look at Rashi, well then the Rashi comments on the chachamim. I'm sorry. So if what does the pasuk say? Because Yehoshua says over here, zos torah adam kiamuzbo, zos ha torah adam kiamuzbo ohel. That's how the Torah discusses and introduces, obviously, the fact of the halachas of Tuma and Tara underneath an ohel. And then Uksivasim says by the mishkan, vayifros es ohel al hamishkan, that Moshe took the ohel and spread it over the mishkan. Right, the mishkan was made out of a lot of cloths, so a lot of animal hides. So he took it and threw it over the mishkan. So malahalim bidei adam, afkan bidei adam. Just like Moshe did it himself, right? It was bidei adam, is through human intervention that the mishkan was created. So too, it must be for the halachas of Tuma and Tara, and the ohel must be created by man with intention to create an ohel. V'rabbanan, what do the rabbanan do with that? So they say, they learn ohel, ohel, riba. They have extra words to include. It says the word ohel several times. If you look at the pasuk, right, if you look in the Torah, or pasuk says, zos ha-Torah adam kiamuz ba-ohel, that's one. Kol abahel ha-ohel, that's two. V'chol asher ba-ohel, three. So Rashi says, "All them two books even parshas para." Right? It says many times the word ohel, so that will include l'rabos afa osa me'ilav. That includes according to Chachamim even an ohel that was made on its own. So apparently, again, that's we're trying to figure out Rabbi Yehuda's shita when it comes to an ohel, and we're starting with Tuma and Tara, and then we'll bring it back to our Mishnah. So here it says very clearly that Rabbi Yehuda holds that an ohel that was not created by man for the purposes of an ohel is not an ohel. The problem is that he seems to have a contradictory position in a different similar case. Really, Rabbi Yehuda holds that a tent, an ohel that was not made by man, is not an ohel. Or minhu, I'll give you a stira. Chatzeros hayubinu, be yishalayim. Okay, this requires a little bit of background. The tzedukim, Rashi quotes this partially over here, that the tzedukim said, and if you remember, we had this a little bit, I forget what it was from Sefta, I think it was in Yuma. Yeah, Rashi quotes over here in Yuma, that the tzedukim used to say that by paraduma is not allowed to be brought by somebody that is a tuvul yom. Again, a tuvul yom is someone who has gone to the mikvah. He's waiting for Harav Shemesh. He's waiting for the sun to go down to finish his tahara process. So he's still kind of, sort of, maybe a little bit tummy. The tzedukim said that person cannot bring the paraduma, cannot come in contact and do anything with the paraduma water. So to go and refute the tzedukim, who wanted to, right, they only learned the Torah Shvachtav, not the Torah Shvapeh, to prove the Tzedukim wrong, the Chachamim went to an unbelievable length to make sure that the Paraduma was brought through Tahor people, and then the person who was dealing with the water at the end would become, they would make him into a Tzvul Yom, and then that would show that Tzvul Yom is in fact allowed to interact with the, what's it called, with the water. Now, the Mishnah explains that basically children, they used to raise children up in a certain secluded area, basically so they should not become tamei. I mean, that they should not become tamei mace. Tosis over here points out that the other tuma they were not worried about, but they didn't want tamei mace. So basically, they would help to have the children kind of deal with the process. The children were raised on these secluded platforms for 7-8 years, and this whole procedure, this whole process to raise these children, to make sure that a couple stages in the paraduma process would not become tame as well. So this is. Let's just read the Mishnah, then we'll see a little bit more more that becomes clear. Or maybe I'll bring a steer. Let's see. Chateras shayu benu is b'Yushalayim. They would build these courtyards in Yushalayim. Agabi sela, on top of stone, meaning stone all the way down to the bottom of the earth, right? So that they wouldn't have any potential dead body under there. So metachtem chalal, and underneath it was chalal, was empty space, meaning they would make underneath, not underneath the rock, but underneath the platform. So they would have at least a tefach of space, because if you remember from the discussions of Tumen Torah, if there's a tefach of space between a dead body and the ohel and the, let's say, the kever on top of him, so then the tumah stops. But if it's just complete, if it's flat, if everything is filled in, so then the tumah goes straight up to Shammai. So they would have a platform underneath these courtyards. The pnei kever at the home, because maybe there would be kever at the home, means a grave in the deep, but it means maybe there was a dead body under there somehow. So they would make sure, just to be careful, right, to make sure that there was some interspersed, there was some space between the potential dead body and the courtyard. Right? They would bring pregnant women who gave birth there, and they would raise their children, right, for the paraduma. So again, so they would keep them secluded, right, protect from any possibility of coming into contact with a dead body. So they would go, these children, and before they were 7 or 8 years old, right, before they became able to have tumas keri, so they would go, and you'll see in a second, ride on the backs of these horses, these oxen, and draw the water for sprinkling in the paraduma, right, to make sure that there was no tumas mace involved. Fine. So so these kids were raised basically away from society. They had their own little complex over here, which is crazy, but this is unbelievable. So umagalas b'nehem shal lepara, they would raise their children for the paraduma service. Umavim shvarim, then finally when they were ready to get this water, they would bring oxen, al gabem dlosos, and on top of these oxen were doors, as you can imagine, not just a flat piece of wood, but they were doors, I guess. The tinogos yoshvin al gabem, and the children would sit on top of them. Right, again, the point of the door is, again, to make an ohel, to make sure, God forbid, that if the oxen were walking over a kever, so the doors would create this tefach of space, right, between, as an ohel, right, between the potential, the grave, and the children, because we're trying to make sure that they stay tohor, to make it completely tohor. Now, again, this is just going so far, to make sure that the paraduma was done betara. How do we get to this? I started with the tzedukim, so I think I left out a little point that the chachamim went out of their way to be metame this person who was dealing with the paraduma as a tful yom, but they were nervous that people therefore would take the tumah aspect out of the paraduma. I mean, people will think, oh, this guy's becoming tame right before he deals with the paraduma, it's not a big deal, so it must not be a big deal, you know, to deal with tumah. Maybe the paraduma can really become tame, it's not a big deal. So to counteract that potential laxity in dealing with paraduma, with tumah, so Chazal went to these insane great lengths, right, to make sure that everyone else along the paraduma process was tahor. Right, they would seclude the kohen in the in the Beis Hamikdash for 7 days. If you remember, that was in Yuma. And again, they went out of their way to literally raise these children with no concern, no potential contact with Tumas Meis, right? And then have them draw the water. Okay, so now they're on top of these oxen. You have a door on top of it to make sure there's a tefach there to make sure, God forbid, if the oxen went over a dead body or some sort of kever. Okay, the kosas shall even be a dayim, and not only that, but they also had stone cups, stone utensils, not makavot tumah. And then he gear the shiloch, and they got to the river, the meshiloch, right? That's the river. Yardu l'toch hamayim umilum. They went into the water and filled them up. Right? Rashi again and Tosas point out that apparently there was no concern that there'd be dead bodies in the water. Okay, that makes sense, but maybe the spring would clear them out, or no one goes and buries a dead body in the water. Okay. Velu v'yashu v'lohem, and then they went back up, and they would sit on the doors and take the water back to the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yossi says, Mimkom ha'ayim b'shal she'olam u'memale mi'pnei kever at home. Rabbi Yossi is concerned for a potential dead body in the water. So therefore, not the, the kids would not get down. They would just lower the cup with a rope right from the top of the doors. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, this is the important one for us, that why, again, if we started this whole conversation, Rabbi Yehuda so far had said that an ohel that is not man-made is not an ohel. So Rabbi Yehuda says that lo hayu mavim dolosos el shvarim, they wouldn't bring doors, rather they would sit on these oxen. They would sit on the back of the cows and the oxen, and that would be good enough. Meaning that, and the oxen themselves would be an ohel over any potential kever that they would walk over. So Gemara says, here's exactly the point. One second. These oxen were not made by man as for the purpose of an ohel. But it says in the Brisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yamavim dolosos el shvarim. But apparently, what do you need? What do you see? That it's the oxen that would serve as the ohel. But they weren't made by man. I thought Rabbi Yehuda requires an ohel, a halachic ohel, to be made by human hands with intention to be an ohel. So how could you use these oxen as the ohel to serve, to protect these kids? So, Kiyasa Rav Dimi, I'm Rabbi Lazar, Modi Rav Yehuda, Kamala Egrof. So, Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, and he explained that, yeah, Rabbi Yehuda only holds that an ohel is not an ohel if it wasn't made by man. That's only up to a certain size. An Egrof is a fist. Really, the fist is not an actual fist, but the fist is like as big as a huge, huge fist, right? There's a guy named Ben Avtiach that they quote. It was like the biggest Jew ever, almost. And he had this massive fist. So, it's a huge, massive fist. So if it's bigger than that, then if it's normally, if it's not formed by man, but it was formed naturally, let's say by oxen, or it was, you know, the bugs ate it, or it was whittled away by water, if it was naturally formed, so if it's bigger than this massive fist, so then that's going to be okay. So therefore, obviously, the oxen are much bigger than that, so that they're good enough. Tanina Mihachi, we also learned that in Raisa, Uvod Rabbi Yehuda, Beshkifan Vinakikan Asalayim, yeah, right. Rabbi Yehuda is Moda, he agrees that in case of boulders and holes in the rock, right, so that will be considered an ohel again, because presumably they are massive and much bigger, right, and that is going to be considered an ohel. Ay, v'amez v'harei delas sh'deish b'kama egrofim, v'katani Rabbi Yehuda omer lo hayu mevim delosos al shvarim. Gemara says, well, one second, if you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda agrees that if it's big enough, then it does count as an ohel. So what was the problem with the doors? Why did Rabbi Yehuda say that they ride on the oxen? Well, the doors also. They let the kids ride on the doors as well. That's big enough. So Rabbi says, no. What he means is, lo hutzriku lahavi tlasos. You didn't need to bring doors. Right? You didn't need to bring the doors at all. Because right? That was the point. Meaning because they could just sit on the oxen. That was exactly what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Rava says, actually, lo hayuvi mivin tlasos kol yikar. No, what Rabbi Yehuda means, that they wouldn't bring doors b'chlal, meaning the doors were a different purpose. Meaning they wouldn't bring doors for a different reason. Meaning both Rav and Abaye agree that Rabbi Yehuda means they wouldn't bring doors b'chlal. There was no point, but it's just for a different reason. Right? Abaye says it's because Rabbi Yehuda just points out that the oxen are good enough to block the Tumah. Rava says there's a different reason they wouldn't use the doors, because Shem Epinishin Daiter Shaltino Gaso Alav, because if a kid is riding on a door, and it's flat, and it's comfortable ride, it's not too bumpy, so he gets all excited, he gets all comfortable. Right? And, you know, kids, right, they stick, well, they're all very curious, and if they're feeling comfortable, they'll move around a little bit, and maybe stick their head over the edge, or stick their hand over. Well, that, if you second, you stick your head over the edge of the door, so now there's no longer any door protecting you from potential kever. So they didn't want the kids to get too comfortable, so therefore, right, you can imagine, right, it was a terrifying ride. Right? And instead, they stuck them on the backs of these oxen, which probably wasn't so safe, but okay. And the kid would not be afraid, would not be feel comfortable enough, and he would be afraid to stick his head over. Okay, fine. So that's how we understand Rabbi Yehuda right now. That Rabbi Yehuda will agree that in a case, we'll bring to our mission in a second, Rabbi Yehuda agrees if it's big enough, if it's not man-made, so then, right, it will still be considered an ohel. So, Tani Kavas de Rava, we learned in the Brisa, like Rava said, like Rava suggested, Rav Yehuda Omer Lo Hayu Mevi'im Dolosos Kol Yikar, Mipnei Shedaita Tzvartino Gaso Alav, Shem Yotzi Rosho Oecha Me'evara, Vitav Me'kever Atahom. Right, so again, exactly like Rava said, that they would, that really Rav Yehuda's reason here is that he doesn't want the kids to stick their hands out over the doors. El Mevi'im Shvarim Hamitzrim, rather they bring Egyptian oxen, which are apparently massive, massive oxen. Shekri Seisim Rechavos, their stomachs are big. Fatinokos Yoshvin Al Gabehen, right, and they are sitting on the back of the oxen. Fakosah she'avim v'yadehim, and as we said before, they are carrying stone cups, which are not makabel tuma. Hegiu the shiloach, when they get to the river, yodu malum v'alu v'yoshvim lahem agaveim. And sure enough, the kids will go get off the ox, jump off the oxen, fill the water in the stone cup, and get back on. Okay, now, so that's Rabbi Huda Shita, that even if an ohal that's bigger than a fist, right, that also can still be considered an ohal, even though it's man-made. The problem is, even though it's not man-made. Problem is, Hare mita sheish ba'kamei grofim utznan, Rabbi Huda Omer, nohagin hayinu shayinu yeshenim takas amita b'fnei ezekenim. One second. A bed, right, is obviously bigger than a fist, right? And Rabbi Huda says that they would sleep in the bed, right? And they would sleep in the bed. Apparently, obviously, Rabbi Huda holds that the bed is not legit, right? It's not an ohel here. But if you tell me that Rabbi Huda holds that an ohel, that if an ohel that is technically no good but is bigger than a fist is still considered an ohel, so why does Rabbi Huda allow people to sleep underneath it? Meaning, Rabbi Huda doesn't allow... Rabbi Huda agrees that an ohel that was not technically created to be an ohel, i.e. it was not man-made, right? So it's still going to be an ohel if it's big enough. Why is it still an ohel? Why was it still an ohel, even though it has some sort of psul, it has some sort of problem in it? It wasn't made for purposes of ohel, but it's big enough, so therefore it's going to be an ohel. Well, here too, you have a problem. You have a bed, right, which is not a proper... It's not a proper ohel, right? As Rashi says over here, it's a diras sarai, right? It's not more than that. And still, right? Still, we're going to say that the ohel doesn't count, even though it's bigger than a fist. It says shani mita hol gaba suya. So a bed is different than, let's say, a pair of oxen, because the bed is made for it to be on top of. Right? Again, in a chanami, that right, it's not considered to be an ohel because. Meaning the bed is what's the chashuv part of the bed is on top of it, not underneath it, right? That so that kavana means that the top is not legit. That means that the top is the most important part of the bed, and therefore underneath it, right? Again, if we're talking about space underneath an ohel, right? If you're talking about underneath the bed, so that's, you know, many many fist sizes. But if you're sleeping on top of it, so that's gonna show that your intention to sleep on that bed is really for lying down and not for being underneath the ohel. So the Gemara says shvarim nami legabana suyun. One second. So if you're comparing beds to oxen, you ride on top of oxen. So why? Obviously, that's the same. So who cares that the bed is made to lie on? So Kiyos or Oven, Rabbi Elazar, or Oven explaining to him, Rabbi Elazar, Shani Shvarim, Ho Maginin Ala Roim, Bachama Pnechama, Gishamim Pnechishamim. Because apparently, the shepherds used to shield their faces and their heads, as Rashi says, underneath the oxen when it was raining or when it was hot. So apparently, the oxen are, you do use the space underneath the oxen, but the bed obviously is not used, the space underneath is not used. The Gemara says, well, actually it is. Yahaki, if that's true, mitanani. So a bed also, hol megina al-menal and misandalim shetachtea. It's not only nowadays that we put our, you know, shoes under the bed. Back then, they used to use the storage underneath the bed for shoes and the like. So why shouldn't that be any different than oxen? So Gemara says, "Elam Rava Shani Shvarin." No, it's a different reason that oxen are different than beds because of the pasuk. The oxen, the skeleton of the oxen, hide and the hides and the skins protects what's inside the oxen. Shneim, as the pasuk says, "Or Basher Tal Bishenu V'Atzmos Gidin T'Sochacheni." That you protect me with skins and flesh and etc. And to sochacheni, you have that lashon of schach, right? You have by a skeleton. So that's going to be, and actually that's why an oxen is going to be considered an ohel and not a bed. So Gemara says, Yivai Seimla. Well, and another reason, perhaps another answer, Rabbi Huda Tameh. Maybe this is Rabbi Huda Shita that we quoted before. Damar Sukkah Diras Karav Beinan. If you remember, right, Rabbi Huda says way back in the Masechta, right, at the beginning of the Masechta, that a sukkah that's more than 20 amos is good. Right, and we had a whole list on Daf Zion, I think, if I'm not mistaken, of a bunch of people, a bunch of Tanaim, and perhaps Amoraim as well, I don't remember, that say that a sukkah has some sort of permanence to it. Right, we're going to quote here in a second. For example, we had Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon required four doors instead of three. So he also holds that there's some sort of kvius to a sukkah. So Rabbi Yehuda holds that a sukkah needs to be a diras keva, right? Or it can be a diras keva, right? It has to be all the way up to 20 amos. Or even more than that. So apparently, so when you're faced with a diras arai, a temporary, right, an ohel, a mita, a bed, that's inside of a diras karva, so that doesn't count, right? So v'havila diras arai, v'sukka ohel keva, v'lasi ohel arai, mevatel ohel keva, right? It went, compared to an ohel keva, compared to a permanent structure, right, a little small play tent bed, right, is not going to be significant when and interfere and counteract that designation. So Arai, the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon, the Amar Nami Sukkah Diras Keva Binan, V'Asi Ol Arai V'Vata Ol Keva. 1 second, Rabbi Shimon, as I mentioned a second ago, says that the Sukkah also has to be Diras Keva, right? It has to have four walls, as if you remember. But he also holds in our Mishnah, right? If you remember our Mishnah that we quoted today, that that a bed is sleeping underneath an ohel, right, is going to mess it up. So the Gemara says, that's exactly the machlokas. Mar sover asi ohel arai mevatel ohel keva, umar sover lo asi ohel arai mevatel ohel keva. Right, that's the machlokas in our Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon says that if you're sleeping under an ohel arai, a temporary dwelling, inside of a permanent dwelling, so that's going to mess you up. You're considered to be not in the sukkahs. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, what do you mean? An ohel arai, this bed over here, does not do anything if you're in an ohel keva, and therefore there's not going to be any nullification by the fact that you're in a sukkah if you're sleeping underneath a bed and a canopy. Amar Rabbi Shimon Ma'aseh B'Tavi Avda, right again in the last part of the Mishnah said that is the story with Rabbi Gamliel. Tani Melanda Abraisa Amar Rabbi Shimon Misicha Social Rabbi Gamliel Demand Shnei Dvarim, from the speech of Rabbi Gamliel, from Rabbi Gamliel's comment about it, Tevi is his Aved, his Eved, his servant, we learn two things. Lamandash Avadim Pturim in the Sukkah, we learn that Avadim are Pater from Sukkah. Now, if Tosus is a good point, right? Alpha Gav, the high mitzvah, Asay Shishman Grama, this is a mitzvah, Asay Shishman Grama, right? Why would you need to learn from Rabbi Gamliel that an Eved is Pater from Sukkah, right? An Eved is Chayev, an Eved Kanani is Chayev in mitzvahs like a woman, which means he's potter from mitzvah seishes my grandma, because his time is not his, and he always has to be serving his master. So this is just an example of that. So Tosfos says, Lashmi Inan, right, the second Tosfos, Talo Tema Dechayavim Mishum Dechtiv Teshu Kentaduru, because he's an extra pasuk here by Sukkah that you might think that you need your Eved in the Sukkah with you, because the pasuk says, you should dwell in the Sukkah like you dwell in your house, right, Teshu Kentaduru. So you might have thought, that means including your Eved, that just like you're used to having your Avadim with you, so you also have to have your Avadim with you in the Sukkah. So therefore, we learn from Rabbi Gamliel that an Eved is Pater and servant. Okay, that's A. What's B? And like we pointed out before, right, we learn Paschal like Rabbi Shimon, that, and like Tanakama, that if you sleep underneath a bed in a Sukkah, so you are not Yotze. So the Gemara says, V'lema midvarim shel Rabbi Gamliel. So why didn't Rabbi Shimon, what Rabbi Shimon said, Misicha Social Rabbi Gamliel, right, from this comment of Rabbi Gamliel, why don't we just learn, right, Midvar Shem Rabbi Gamliel, right? Why don't we say from, like, it's very strange that he should say from this Sicha, from this talk, from this comment, like, almost like it's backhanded, right, from the words of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel taught us this halacha. Why, that's usually what the Tanaim and Amoraim say. What is it from this kind of, like, it's like, almost like he was on the phone and you overheard him, and, good to know. Now, usually we quote Tanaim properly, that Rabbi Gamliel said, this is the halacha. So why did he say it like that? So the Gemara says, Milsa Agav Orche Kamash Malan. Rabbi Shimon is trying to teach us something else. Right, the third thing, in addition to the two halachas that Rabbi Gamliel is teaching us. Kiyad Amar Rav Acha Bar Ada, Ramila Rav Acha Bar Ada, Amar Rav Amnuna Amar Rav. He's trying to teach us this. Minayin Sha'afilu Sichas Talmid Chachamim Tzricha Limud. How do you know that even the speech, even just the talking, the sicha, not really speech, but really just the comments, the backhanded comments, not backhanded, offhanded comment of the Talmid Chachamim, need to be checked out, need to be learned, need to be analyzed. Shneimar Pasuk says, that's actually, that part of the pasuk is not well known. Pretty much the rest of the pasuk is like different songs that you have undoubtedly heard. The pasuk says, it's in Tehillim. Rav Yake Eitz Shasu Al Pagi Maim, Asher Per Yoh Yitain Beito, Ve'aleo Lo Yibol, V'chol Asher Yaseh Atzliach, right, Shwaki for sure has, V'chol Asher Yaseh Atzliach, Anyway, but so what is that saying? It's talking about the Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham is like H Sasul Al Pagei Mayim, right? A tree on near a stream. Asher Perio Yitain Biito. Its fruits give at the right time. And then here's the kicker, right? This is what we just quoted. Va'alehu lo yibol, and its leaves do not dry out. Or do not fade away. So what does it mean? It's leaves. So leaves are not the primary produce of a tree, right? That's the fruit. But the leaves also come from a fruit. So that's the comparison here. That even the Talmid Chachamim, just the comments of the Talmid Chachamim have to be learned as well, right? And analyzed and appreciated. Or just like the leaves are the secondary offshoots of a tree, so too these offhand comments of the Talmid Chachamim are chashuv, right? And they shouldn't be just let alone. They should still be analyzed as well. Okay, we'll stop here by the Mishnah, and we'll go right through in the Hilchos Shas tomorrow. Good to be back with everybody. Have a great day or night, depending on where you're listening to this.